We've all been there. You spend millions of dollars driving traffic to your company's website, and then the results just aren't what you'd hoped. On top of that, 81% of marketing leaders say website ownership is a challenge. So what do? Well, you switch to Webflow. Let me tell you why. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your company's most valuable, dynamic marketing asset, your website. From launching a new site to optimizing for conversions, Webflow gives you the tools you need to drive business growth fast. Unlock your website's full potential today at webflow.com. Hi there. My name is Jenny Rooney, Chief Experience Officer and host of Adweek's newest podcast, Marketing Vanguard. We're so excited to bring you the next evolution of CMO Moves by bringing you insightful content from our marketing community. Together, we'll dive into discussions with CMOs and other C-suite executives who are tasked daily with making decisions that in incremental or monumental ways move the needle for their brands, their companies, and the customers they serve. In each episode, we'll focus on one key idea or decision, why they made it, what it caused, whether it worked, the ripples it set forth, and how it has defined the person as a business leader. We also address missteps, poor choices, and gambles, as mistakes, of course, often yield the greatest knowledge. In addition, we'll ask each guest to share the names of people they rely on daily, as well as a recommendation for whom we should interview next. I'm so excited to be kicking off the launch of Marketing Vanguard with you all, and especially with our very first guest, Mark Spikert, Chief Commercial Officer at Four Seasons Hotels and Resorts. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you so much, Jenny, for having me. I'm delighted to be part of this launch.
Well, I'm thrilled to have you here. We're going to unpack your story in the next few minutes. But Mark, I've known you for quite a number of years now, and it's just been so fascinating to watch your career trajectory. We were just reminiscing about the time we met in New York City and at the L'Oreal headquarters, and so much has happened both in your career and also in the world. Can you just bring us up to speed really quickly on your recent journey of your last few years as a marketing leader and business leader?
Sure. Yeah, no, absolutely. And I remember our conversations back in New York, and it feels like it was yesterday, even though it was quite a few years ago now. But yeah, I think after L'Oreal, I decided to explore the world of tech, and I was at Google for a period of time where, as you know, I like to get into roles that didn't necessarily exist before. And so Google was about to create new teams that would look at clients from a global perspective. And so I jumped on that opportunity, and it was fascinating to kind of learn how Google was approaching client relationships and partner with CMOs and CEOs on how they drive their transformation. So I did that for a period of time. I was looking after consumer packaged good, luxury, and also tech clients, and got a call from someone that I knew back in my L'Oreal days, Emma Wamsley, who at the time was running the consumer unit of GSK. And again, we met back in my L'Oreal days, and she was like, I would love to be part of that special group of clients that get that extra attention. And so I started to create Team GSK while I was at Google, and got me to understand a bit the new world of healthcare, and really appreciating that digitalization was going to be such a critical component. And as this chief digital officer role was created within GSK, I thought I'd jump on board, and it was an incredible ride, because, you know, this was literally right before COVID, and being in a healthcare company in the middle of COVID was quite something. And a lot of the digitalization obviously really got accelerated, I guess, in all industries, but specifically in healthcare during my time there. So it was quite fascinating, and also an opportunity for me to kind of stretch out a bit of my marketing core as I started to understand how digital can transform how you think about marketing, but also how digital can transform other parts of the enterprise. And so I was starting to partner with our head of supply chain or head of R&D and bring that transformation kind of mindset to those spaces as well, which was hard because completely new and different versus where my core came from, but super rich from a learning perspective. And then, you know, got a call to explore this opportunity at Four Seasons, which I thought, what a beautiful opportunity for me to go into a brand that obviously I was looking up to, but also in the spirit of creating something new. This was a new role that didn't exist within Four Seasons that brought together kind of a marketing component, right? Which is something that obviously has been what I grew up in, you know, and obviously the L'Oréal role being one of that experience that really kind of shaped and accelerated how I looked at it, but also very importantly, kind of a sales component and also, you know, a much more kind of end-to-end kind of commercial responsibility. And that was the opportunity. And so here I am.
Well, I mean, I love what you said. There's so much in what you said about, you know, at every turn, you took opportunities to learn something new. And so it's, you know, you were able to sort of build on your core, your marketing expertise, but then you stretched into new areas that you knew, you know, you mentioned supply chain, digital. I love that you represent a marketing leader who has owned their own story, owned their own journey. And yet it sounds so intentional around, and I certainly understand hindsight's 2020, but I also think it takes in that moment of opportunity to think strategically, just as you do for your brands and your businesses, you know, how does this make sense for me as an individual and not just a marketing leader, but a business leader? And so when you tell that story, I see that intentionality so dramatically in that. With the Marketing Vanguard podcast, we're talking to marketing leaders as well as presidents and CEOs who came up through the marketing leadership role to talk about how they're defining themselves and the impact they're having on their businesses, not just through the brand lens, but through the overall business lens. And so, you know, you represent that, I think, in spades in the way that you've been able to, you know, like I said, expand upon that core capability while even driving into new avenues. Before we move on to the question set, talk a little bit about that and the decisions you've made, both for yourself, but also for your businesses that you think are representative of that.
Yeah, no, I love the question. And I remember in my first company, I had a really interesting discussion with one of our HR leaders, and they ask you this very simple question in terms of what really gets you up in the morning and how do you use that to really shape kind of the choices that you're taking from here. And it seemed like a pretty simple question, but as I really reflected on it, I think it was quite a powerful one, and that really has led me to make the choices that I've made over time, you know. And the way I formulated it in my own head was around this idea that I love to have a bit of a white piece of paper and then shape it, and I thrive in and the fact that it's hard and the fact that it really pushes you out of your comfort zone and you learn tremendously, right? And so that pushed me to leave Colgate back then. I was there for 14 years and kind of take the L'Oréal job, which was completely new, as you know, when we talked back then. You know, there had never been a CMO before. It was a new role. It was very anti-cultural. But it felt like, what an amazing white piece of paper. It was the same at Google. It was a white piece of paper, because the role hadn't been created. You know, GSK never had a chief digital officer, and Four Seasons never had a chief commercial officer. So I think that common
thread. Definitely sensing a trend, yeah.
You know, some people probably, different people get different, you know, get energy from different places, you know. And, you know, for me, it's the stuff that gets me up in the morning. And that's what I'm trying to then bring back to companies as well, as I'm creating these roles, building capabilities, and obviously driving business impact as a result of it. But that's been my common thread and what has kept me going. And I think, to your point, created that common thread, that fil rouge across the different choices that I've made so far.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me now about something about you that is not reflected in your LinkedIn profile. We're so focused on how we show up in public spaces and places, but tell us something about you that nobody else would really know just by looking at your profile.
Do you know, the other thing that maybe is part of that common thread that we just talked about is this notion about empathy and care, mm-hmm. You know, that I think it's just something that as I kind of grew as a leader and got to understand who I am, I think it's just something that you put the finger on and said, I think this is what really matters to me. And probably the reason why I stayed at Colgate for all this time, because caring was actually one of the fundamental values that the organization had. And so it was a smaller of the consumer packaged good companies, but it had the sense of belonging and the sense of care and the sense of we're all here to support each other to be successful. And it felt like that was something that really imprinted on me, but also connected on the value side. And But I mean, I look at now at Four Seasons, if you fast track, you know, like, wouldn't it be great to have, you know, an amazing job in an amazing kind of company that checks the boxes on that, you know, recognition and that celebration of care and empathy. And that's very much what Four Seasons is all about. You know, the John Davison, who's the CEO who hired me, was joking and saying, this is probably the last job until you retire, because this is a company that has so much opportunities for growth and that I think is a perfect fit for who you are as a person. I remember the discussion in the first interview that I had with him. It was all about just me as a person and whether I was going to be a good cultural fit. There was not a single question on, you know, my skill set or my experiences. It was all about just, you know, am I fitting that golden rule that Four Seasons is so passionate about? And, you know, we have a founder that's Mr. Sharp, who's such an inspirational, iconic leader. And as you get to interact with them, you really understand what that means, and that empathy and that care and that humility that comes through. And that's all captured in his book that you wrote about Four Seasons and what makes Four Seasons Four Seasons. But all that to say that I think this notion of empathy and care is something that I think is something that a lot of people talk about today, particularly post-COVID, of being an important kind of leadership trait. But back in the day, maybe it was a bit less front and center. And I feel now more than ever is something that I feel is core to who I am, and finding a company that kind of matches that in terms of the environment that it creates is very, very special. So
can empathy be learned? And the other question is, you know, what in your life instilled that priority of empathy?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and one of the things that we've been discussing as a leadership team is, you know, how do we role model what empathy looks like, obviously within Four Seasons, but also outside of Four Seasons, right? And it almost feels like, I mean, me being having empathy and care as a core dynamic, it's almost kind of raises the bar for yourself when you're in a company that where that is the norm, kind of show up and continues to kind of to raise the empathy IQ, which is quite, you know, stimulating, right? Because it just, it's special in a way, because it actually makes you feel like you're becoming a better leader, but you're also becoming a better human person, you know, in terms of how you show up to the company that you work with, but also to the broader ecosystem around you. You know, I'm sure sometimes you kind of get stressed because your car is late and, you know, you're eager to get home. And so it's like, it was like, how do I make sure I behave with, you know, a third party that has nothing to do with Four Seasons the same way that I behave in Four Seasons, because that's the culture of the company? And how does that help you kind of elevate your empathy and your care IQ, regardless of who do you interact with, right? And so it felt like that quite stimulating. And then I guess to the second part of your question in terms of how that got instilled into me, I think based on how I grew up, I guess, as a kid with my parents and the values that I think I was taught, but then also the first company that I joined, because again, Colgate had caring as a fundamental value. So it's almost like I had that as a personal experience. And then from a professional point of view, the first company that imprinted on me and infused on me was one that really put that at the forefront of how they're expecting people to behave. Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Based on all of your varied experience and how you've patterned out your career trajectory thus far, do you define yourself as a marketing executive with a lot of ancillary or complementary expertise, or do you think of yourself as a business leader with a marketing background or a marketing foundation?
That's a great question. And, you know, I think I would probably say the latter. I remember when I joined L'Oréal, I think the anchoring of the role, which it was a role that didn't exist, and I know we briefly talked about it when we met the first time, was how do we almost kind of shape the business strategy, and then how does the marketing capability kind of enable that? At the time, L'Oréal was talking about going after a billion new consumers, and so I was like, how do I anchor my role to help enable us getting to the next billion consumers, right? And that helped us shape strategic choices in terms of category entries or the types of capabilities that we needed to put in place to get there. And so it really kind of started as what are we trying to achieve from a business perspective? And then what are the capabilities that we then need to enable that to happen? You know, and some of them were hardcore marketing capabilities, you know, in terms of what's our media setup? How do we build the right insights and analytics capabilities? But some of them were, you know, much more broader than that in terms of how do we think differently about how we look at our categories as an example, right? And instead of looking them into silos based on, you know, the way they we were actually distributing the products through channels of distribution, how do we actually look at it as an integrated, you know, category the way the consumer would actually look at it, right? And so, and it's similar to the role that I'm doing now at Four Seasons. I think the core anchoring is around how does the commercial organization kind of bring a guest lens in terms of how we do things, mm-hmm. and how does that inform, of course, marketing and commercial, but also what we're doing on the operational side and what we're doing on the development side. So it felt like, you know, similar in terms of that notion, how do we inform business strategy and then build a capability within, you know, obviously the marketing space in that particular instance to deliver against it.
Mm. If you weren't in your current role, what would you have done with your life? You know, if your career hadn't gotten to this point, what else would you have been doing, Mark? I often think back to my college education, and the only other thing that I really, really was obsessed with was botany. So I could have been in a completely different role had I pursued that passion.
Well, it's a difficult question because I have, you know, a couple of things that I would consider. You know, one is, you know, I'm a certified spin instructor. So I was one of the early adopters of SoulCycle back in the days of in New York. So my secret dream was to always just, you know, retire early. Now I'm getting a little old to become a spin instructor, but I'm still, you know, trying to make it work. But,
oh, that's amazing and very inspirational for me personally. So I should get on that.
You know, and so certainly kind of, you know, used my Peloton bike in during the COVID days quite a bit. But so maybe that was one. And then the other one, I remember when I was a kid, I would always go on holidays to visit my grandparents who were living in Germany. And my grandfather would always take us to the zoo. And I would drive him nuts because I would actually go and do an inventory of all the different animals within the zoo. And my dream was like, you know, one day I want to just be a, you know, manage a zoo or something. And, you know, fast track that. And I was just in Prague with my children because one of the beauties of Four Seasons is you get to experience
go everywhere.
And go everywhere with them. And so we went to the anniversary of our Prague hotel, which is a beautiful hotel. And one of the you know, experiences that we created for the children was to actually go to the Prague Zoo, which is one of the most beautiful zoos in Europe. And we got a behind the scenes access that only Four Seasons can do. And to this day, for the children and myself, I have to say, it's been one of the most incredible experiences we've had. And the one thing that we all fondly kind of remember. So,
That's, you know, by that, on that point, and I love that. Four Seasons, you mentioned Four Seasons and experience. I mean, Four Seasons is nothing if not experience, right? I mean, the overall, I'm sure it's all about the overall and enveloping feeling, experience, memories, every sense, you know, all of the four senses being, or five senses, I'm sorry, Four Seasons, five senses being, you know, engaged, right, for people who are experiencing a Four Seasons stay. What can marketers learn from that? What can other marketers learn from that priority that Four Seasons has built its reputation on?
Yeah, it's a great question. It's something that we're super passionate about because I think that sits at the very core of our brand. And we call it, you know, Four Seasons creates luxury with genuine heart, right? And the way we do that is very much around how we create small unscripted acts of love, right? Or how do we display that radical empathy that makes the Four Seasons experience very, very special, you know? And so, and, you know, of course you have, you know, standards of excellence that you want to make sure you push out, but very often what makes that difference is that small little act of unscripted empathy or unscripted love, right? And so, and we have so many stories when we go across our hotels where that act of unscripted love is what really made the difference, you know? And so I remember when I was doing just my induction, I spent some time with our housekeeping team here in London, and we went through the different rooms, and you know, the team was explaining to me how they were interacting with guests and, you know, and just basically their jobs. And I remember the housekeeper mentioning a story where they had found a little picture of a guest on a side desk next to the bed. And they took it upon themselves to actually go and buy a little frame and put the picture in the frame. And the playback from the guest was like, oh my God, this is such a, you know, nobody told, you know, the team to do that, but it just showed that there was a real sense of care. And that little attention, you know, made the stay of that guest, you know? And so I think that very much is at the core of how do you think about creating experiences that are not cookie cutter experiences? You know, yes. we're in the luxury business. But I think that applies to, you know, any kind of brands, right? And it's like, how do you think about creating experiences that come from the heart, that are genuine, that are authentic, and that shows that you really paid attention to understand what the guest wanted or what might, you know, surprise the guest in a positive way, right? But it comes from a place of I've invested in understanding that, and therefore I'm creating this well moment, and it doesn't need to come with this massive, you know, experience. In this particular instance, it was a very small experience that ended up being very meaningful, right? So I think that for me has been quite eye-opening as I've observed what we do as a brand and how we bring it to life successfully.
I love the point about unscripted. And sometimes it's things that aren't planned that have the greatest impact. So fascinating and so much takeaway for every brand, truly. And there's an element, I mean, it's human, and there's an element of empowerment that everybody who works for a given company would have to have in order for that to really manifest, which is exciting.
And it goes back to your first question in terms of what's not on the LinkedIn or whatever, this notion of empathy and care, because you need to have people who have the brand in their veins so that they can do something that is at the end of the day going to be noticed, right? But it comes across as genuine. And when you get to interact with our staff, and the reason why people stay for 10, 20, 30 years is because they have that, they care about their careers, but they very much care about the brand at the same time as well, you know? So there's this commitment to making this a better place. And acting as a result of it.
Love that. Thank you. Now I want to ask you a question. You know, I talk to a lot of marketing leaders who say, we hear so much about successes, right? We hear so much about the case studies and the stories of people who have had success. And of course, we're in the habit of celebrating success, which is wonderful. But people, especially marketing leaders, also want to hear about mistakes made, decisions not made, choices not taken, and frankly, sometimes even failures, because that's where some of the greatest learning can come. So talk to me a little bit about an experience that you've had or an episode where perhaps you made a decision that you regretted or that showed you something in retrospect about what you could have done differently and what you learned from that.
I think for me, both are people related. You know, as I said, I care and I'm empathetic. But sometimes you have made tough choices, right? And it's incredibly hard, you know? And so maybe I'll answer the first question of what I haven't done and then what I've done that didn't pan out, which you'll see both have a people kind of connection to it. The first was in a past company, when you're kind of pressured to build capabilities and expertise, and you're not sure if you have that internally just yet, right? So the easy solution is to just go and buy expertise and plug it in and it's done, right? And so we had quite a bit of energy to try to move some topics, you know, at pace. And so I was close to actually pulling the plug on an individual saying, okay, you know, the person doesn't have the skill set. It's going to be faster for me to just bring in expertise. But in my gut, I was like, you know, it's not the right decision. And it'll lead back to where I failed and what I've learned from it. And I had a very frank discussion with that person at the time. And I was like, okay, listen, you know, you're not delivering to standard right now. I think part of the equation is you need to make sure you're making some tough decisions on the team underneath you, because the combination of you and the team underneath you is just not going to lead to success. And so how do we make sure we are building the right team underneath you, because you're only as good as your team, right? And it took quite a bit of investment from my end, because obviously I enabled him to kind of build the A team, but he, you know, was so energized because he was passionate about the company, he was passionate about, you know, making this a challenge that he wanted to be successful at. And till this day, you know, it's probably one of my greatest satisfactions, because I felt like I actually invested in someone that, A, I wasn't sure originally, But then I ended up creating kind of a success story as a result of it, which I think is probably one of the most successful things. Versus, of course, it's always satisfying when you have a superstar that you continue to nurture and develop, but you have someone you want show on. And sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't work out, right? Because I had instances where I bet on someone and then in the end it just didn't work out, but in this instance it did, and it felt great, and we're still in touch. And actually I had him consult with us, as we were still building the team at Four Seasons for a period of time. And so it was great to kind of continue to partner with him even after me leaving my prior company. And then where I failed, I guess, that was just, I think it was still relatively early on in my career, where it's just, making decisions probably too fast on people. I had moved from a big subsidiary to a smaller subsidiary, and, I was my first marketing director role, and I was like, I need to make an impact, and I need to move fast, and I probably moved too fast, right? And I probably was too disruptive at the time, and pulled out some people, put in some new people in, and probably, through too much change, it was a small subsidiary at the time. And so kind of the learning there was like, how do we go slow to go fast, right?
Yeah.
Particularly when
yeah.
people decisions, even when you have tremendous pressure to drive value and drive impact when you're in a new position or a new environment. And then just kind of baking in the understanding of the context, right? So for me, the adjustment was like, you're moving from a big organization that has lots of resources to a much smaller organization. And so every decision is demultiplied just because of that context, right? So yep. adjusting for that, I think, was another big learning, I guess.
Yep. As no role is singular, right? I mean, we rely on networks. Every time you said just a minute ago, you're only as good as your team. Who within your organization do you feel like is your, or people are your best collaborators, the people you need to work with and rely on to be successful?
One of the things that, Google was pretty big on is the sense of how do you create a sense of psychological safety and how do you build kind of a trust foundation, and doing quite a bit of work on understanding who people are and how they're wired and how does that impact how you interact with each other. And and the way interacting with Jenny is different than how I interact with someone else, because Jenny is wired differently than the other person, right? And so, and just kind of adjusting kind of your leadership style as a result of your expectations or your decoder. Mm-hmm. And so we've done quite a bit. I stole that from Google, but with a company that has many different clients, but it's called Discover Insights, and it's just another kind of personality test, like the many ones that you, I'm sure, have experienced for yourself as well. But it's just this recognition that it's very often the people that the opposite spectrum of you in terms of how they wire and how they think mm-hmm. are the best partners, right?
Totally. Well, because we learn from different. We learn right. from right the unlike us. Yeah.
Right. So yeah. I'm an example, like, I'm not great at process and, this, that, whatever. And so, I like to think big and have lots of ideas. And so kind of figuring out how I partner with people that have a very different way of thinking,
yeah.
even though there's always a bit of an adjustment phase that sometimes can be a bit hard because we think very differently.
Once yeah, for sure.
That click, it's quite magical. And then you feel like you're really enhancing each other in a quite powerful way and making sure that the team around you is balanced so that you have different influences of what people can bring to the table, and being very conscious about that, I think I've found quite powerful. So that's
for me. Is that your CFO? Is that your CEO? Is that, your chief human resources officer? What, who do you find yourself in conversation with a lot? Interesting conversation to drive the business forward.
That's a good question. I think one of the things that's quite unique at Four Seasons is we're a very tight and actually small leadership team, and so we're six people versus, teams in the past that were much bigger. And so that enables you to have a much more qualitative kind of relationship just because, it's just a much smaller team, as simple
sure.
as it sounds, but it just gets you from the transactional relationship into a much more qualitative kind of relationship, I would say. And so I think this is probably the leadership team that I've built the strongest relationship with, just because also it's a bit easier, when you have a smaller group like that. And also because it's a smaller group, I think people are much clearer on their swim lanes, right? Because, it's not like you know, you have people where lines start to get blurry as a result of it, you know? And so I think everybody kind of respects their area of expertise and is accountable to it. And then are there to support each other? I mean, you know, it's like every time I join an organization, there's always, you know, one or two people that I, you know, everybody's excited. And then maybe there are a few people that are less excited, right? But, and I'm not trying to sound, you know, cheesy, but it's true. I mean, it's the first time in my career that I joined an organization where everybody was generally excited for me to join. And I felt it from the leadership team. And again, it goes back to people being excited about, you know, the fact that, you know, they have career aspirations themselves, but they fundamentally care about the company. And they felt, okay, great. You know, we have someone that brings great experiences along. So let's just try to figure out how we make that person successful. Right. So,
yeah, it gets so, you get so much energy from that. It's really incredible. What scares you as a business leader, and what do you do to overcome those fears?
I think complacency is what scares me, right? And particularly when you're in businesses that have been successful. I mean, I've been lucky because I've been in many companies that have been quite successful. I mean, L'Oreal is obviously very successful. Google has been very successful. GSK was very successful. And Four Seasons has been incredibly successful, right? So it's like, how do you, particularly when you're a newcomer, you're creating new roles, you know, you come in with humility, you know, listening abilities, but at the same time, create a bit of a sense of urgency in terms of how do we make sure that with all this success, you know, continue to kind of to think about how you reinvent themselves and make sure that, you know, the future is as bright as the past or the present, because, you know, you've seen many companies that have been incredibly successful and then suddenly kind of miss the mark. And in today's environment, things are very, very fast. I mean, even when you just think about what just happened over the weekend, right? And so that for me is the sense about how do we make sure you are, and that's, I feel like it's my role, I mean, getting into these new companies and how do you package it in the right way, right? So it comes across the right way where people get energized versus not, as you create a sense of burning platform and a sense of, yes, you know, we've done things incredibly well, but how do we think about the what if? And again, going back to our founder, Mr. Sharp, he always talks in his book about the what if, because that was his mindset and all the innovation that he brought to the table. And how do we make sure we never lose that as we become bigger, or as we become, you know, and as we continue to be successful? And we're our best year ever in 2022, but it doesn't mean the future is going to always be as bright. So how do we make sure we're like, you are this agitator. I think L'Oreal called it la saine inquietude, which means the healthy unease, right? So that you're always, you know, you're never really satisfied with where you are, and that keeps you going and that keeps reinventing yourself. And it's hard, right? It's very hard.
It is. We'll be back with more Marketing Vanguard after this quick break.
One thing I hear from my listeners all the time is that marketing leaders are under more pressure than ever to deliver real business impact. You know, more conversions, lowering CAC, and bringing in more revenue. But that's impossible when you're stuck with tools that don't move as fast as you do. That's why companies like Dropbox, Ideo, and Orange Theory all trust Webflow to power their web experiences. Webflow's visual-first platform empowers your team to own your most valuable dynamic marketing asset, your website. Learn how teams like yours are using Webflow to achieve their most ambitious goals today at webflow.com.
So, Mark, I want to ask you, this next question is related to inspiration. And I've talked to so many marketing leaders who say fundamentally at the end of the day, what they need a constant flow of is inspiration. You know, there's so much creativity that marketing leaders bring to bear in their organizations. And so having that fuel for inspiration is so key. Where do you find inspiration that informs your work?
I always found it so powerful to push yourself out of your company and try to get inspiration from the outside. And I think when you're getting busy, I think the risk is that you kind of get sucked in and, you know, you're just, you know, missing that link with what's happening outside of your space. And so I joined a board of a company almost a year ago. It's a small company called Haag Kliniken. It's a VC-backed company. It's a beauty company, actually. So I still keep my connection back with the beauty space.
That's great.
And it's a small company, but I feel incredibly excited. We just had a board meeting last week, actually, to see how small organizations really challenge themselves to drive success. And it's hard, right? It's hard for big companies to be successful, particularly in the beauty space. You know, when you're a small company, how hard is it to really emerge given how cutthroat and competitive it is? But I found it incredibly exciting to see, okay, with a handful of resources, how do you drive success? And then, you know, the founder is obviously still, you know, in the board conversations and just always kind of listening through the lens of the founder and how he is, you know, listening to his vision, thinking about how he's kind of plugged it through over the years and how he's kind of looking at the opportunities kind of moving forward. And so, so I think, you know, getting the inspiration from the big players, I think is super helpful, right? Because you want to make sure you're understanding where the, you know, super sophisticated capabilities are. But also I found it quite powerful to kind of look at actually really small, agile, nimble players that are about to emerge. And what is it that is making them emerge? And what's the special kind of sauce very often told by the founder that has them made successful? And how do we get them to unleash the potential? I think is I find quite exciting, right? Because going back to my complacency point earlier, I think very often big companies fail because they start to become clunky and they lose that sense of agility and that sense of guest centricity. And, you know, and so I think, yeah, the interaction with small companies, I found quite eye-opening.
Yeah. And that to me, that's an example of you being strategic about the different, the quote unquote different that you need to continue to have access or insight into, because it is such a vastly different lens than what you're dealing with day in, day out, and what you've dealt with at the bigger companies that you've led at. So very, very fascinating. What is marketing from your vantage point, given all of your various roles and frankly, the diversity of oversight that you've had, what does marketing need to do to be respected and supportive in companies as we move forward? You know, obviously our world is changing so dramatically, and as is the practice of marketing, but, you know, assessing where we are in the here and now, what do you think it needs to do, and what do marketing leaders need to do to drive that relevance and drive that evidence, if you will, of impact and necessity in organizations?
You know, for me, the marketing function and the commercial function, defined, I guess, more broadly, should be all about driving the IQ around the guest and the customer, or whatever you call it in your company, right? And so, yep. You know, we hear so much of it. You know, everybody talks about, you know, consumer's king, or guest is important, or it's, you know, hanging on walls or whatever, right? But then in the end, it's like, how well do you really understand your guests and your customer? And again, it sounds like a bit vanilla, but I think it's, you know, based on all the different companies that I've been to, building that, you know, guest muscle has always been part of what we've been doing. You know, when I was Google, the whole genesis behind the teams that they were trying to build when I joined was a better customer understanding, and how do you create teams that were much more bespoke, so that Team Samsung looks very different than Team L'Oreal than Team P&G, because we were trying to put ourselves under the skin of those clients, and those teams ended up looking very different, right? Because the way you interact with the Samsung is very different than how you interact with the P&G, and you'll sell business in a different way, right? And so for me, at Four Seasons, I think one of the first focuses and missions that I was given by, you know, my CEO was, you know, help us to really continue to understand who our best guests are and how do we get more of those best guests. Because as you can imagine, those best guests are much more profitable and much more interesting for us to go after than guests that are, you know, come to us once and don't necessarily come back, right? And so, and honing your craft on how you're building those insights team is also something that I found particularly fascinating, you know, because, if I just think about my Four Seasons experience and the team that we built there, I mean, we literally started the team from scratch post-COVID, and we rebuilt a team from scratch that is very different maybe than some of the insights function that I've built in the past. Very orientated around, going back to your question, is marketing about, you know, capabilities or business, but I'm mostly kind of ex-consultants that look at insights in a way that, how do I help me answer big business questions? And then how do we operationalize and activate that to drive impact, right? So I guess long way to answer your question, but I think that's kind of how I look at it.
Can you share an example of a time you were able to connect the dots, right? Between a decision you made, a marketing decision you made, and the trajectory of the company, or a new opportunity that was realized at a company, you know, connecting those dots, I think, is so cool. And what was the data and what was the insights that you were able to use to inform that?
You know, I mean, maybe I'll use an example from my L'Oreal days, because that's, I guess, in the public domain now as well. But I think, you know, we're doing all the strategy work behind, you know, how do we get to the next billion consumers? I think the, and we translated that back into, how do we look at it through the lens of the US? Because at the time I was part of the US organization. And it was quite eye-opening because it just highlighted the huge opportunity that we had to still capitalize on existing categories. And you would have said, okay, L'Oreal has so many different brands. And so we probably kind of tapped out in terms of potential on a given category. And so in this particular instance, we were talking about skincare and we had lots of different skincare brands. And what the analysis and the data showed is that, you know, we had an opportunity to look at a guest segmentation to really potentialize how we're activating the different brands much more strategically to different guest segments so that they don't overlap as much, to really drive impact, you know, and then how do you do that in the most profitable way in a category that's super high barriers of entry and super, super competitive and with big entrenched kind of players in there, right? And so we took a category and we said, actually, we're going to do this category. And there were some other kind of sexy categories that we had entered in other markets that we could have entered. But we're like, no, let's just put that on hold because we have this big opportunity in front of us that we haven't fully potentialized, that we haven't fully put under the lens of how do we actually work our portfolio and our understanding of the different customers and the different channels to really get it to the next level. And, you know, it all led to us being quite successful in activating that, and then obviously scaling that across other parts of the organization. And so, for me, that was a good example where we decided to, based on data, actually a bit of not making some moves, and focusing and zeroing in to potentializing something that was already there, but by just kind of approaching it differently.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not making the moves that it is the move itself. So, so interesting. So Vanguard, the word Vanguard literally defined means a group of people leading the way in new developments or ideas. What's an example of a development or an idea that you have had that led the way for either a company that you worked for or the industry? Because I know you're also very, you know, there's so much in this industry and among marketing leadership where they seek to come together to drive change and to also find alignment. So in either respect, at a company or in the industry, what is an example of your new development or idea that has had ripple effects that has actually pushed forward?
Yeah, no, I love the question. And, you know, as you know, I love to think outside of the box and bring new thinking to the table. I think going back to that's part of, I think, what
sure.
You know, need to do. And I think within Four Seasons, one of the things that I inherited, which I'm now trying to continue to think about how we build and truly own as a competitive advantage, is what I call AI meets EI. So how does artificial intelligence meet emotional intelligence? And it's really kind of meaning you know, what I think has made us so successful, which is the emotional intelligence, going back to We Create Luxury, Genuine Heart. And we are really displaying kind of acts of love, as we discussed a bit earlier. And how do I combine that with AI, right? And so that I can demultiply, you know, the access to this incredible EI that we have. And so we started, just to give you, illustrate that with a concrete example with chat, which is, again, something that I can't take credit for because that was there before I started. But clearly, I saw the huge potential against it. And, you know, with the team, we're really thinking about how we continue to evolve that. But, you know, the amount and the volume of people that are engaging with our chat, you know, is massive. I mean, it got 3x in terms of volume over the last 3 years. And we're talking in the millions in terms of the amounts of messaging that is happening through our chat. And the beautifulness of it is that you actually always talk to a real person and an expert within Four Seasons, right? So it's not chat. It's not a bot. It's real person that are in the back end actually interacting with you. So you might start your conversation and talking to a concierge because you want to book a restaurant. And then that concierge would hand you over to another Four Seasons expert as a second step. If your second question is around, you know, I want to get some dry cleaning, for example, right? And so you'll just get handover from one of our experts to another expert. And so it feels like you have a completely seamless experience because you're talking, it's just one conversation, but you're just being plugged in into the various Four Seasons expert. And it's almost kind of the digital experience is even greater than the physical experience in a way, because you have one conversation with, it could be up to, I don't know, 10 people, but they're all the subject matter experts in their field, right? And they're very, see, they bring their heart into the conversation. They're caring, they're genuine empathy, as I mentioned before, but it's powered through text. So that's, for me, as the AI meets EI. And I feel like it's something that we can truly own as a company, right? Because, you know, the big hospitality chains, I'm sure they're going to go really, really big on AI. You know, maybe the tiny little boutique player might go really big on EI because they're super small and they can do that. But we have scale and we have heart. And if you can bring the two pieces together, I think it's something that is super on brand and is going to be, you know, super, super a great competitive advantage.
Yeah, that, and that could be become an industry standard. I mean, you it's such new territory, and the fact that you're experimenting with it and seeking to find, you know, sort of the gold standard of that is huge. For anybody listening, anything else about the just because of the kind of company that you're at, any insights, any consumer insights that are interesting as far as now that we're on the other side of the pandemic, travel, you know, travel restrictions and an openness to travel, even though we're frankly dealing with some tough economic times still. Where are we at just generally with the travel industry and in particular luxury travel?
I mean, we're very lucky in a sense because, you know, there's travel and then there's travel, right? And so if you think about it from a high net worth perspective, there are 55 million high net worth individuals in the world. And by 2025, there'll be an incremental 30 million high net worth individuals, right? And so it just shows you that, you know, the luxury space and hospitality within that is a good space to be in because, you know, just the pool of people who can actually afford those kind of luxury experience keeps getting bigger. And so, and we certainly saw that in 2022, and a lot of it was revenge traveling, but we're certainly seeing that into 2023 as we look at the year. There's some geographical changes where obviously we see APAC come back real big with the opening of China, but we continue to see the US being incredibly strong as well. In Europe, you know, we have a lot of new pipeline, new openings in Europe as well. I think there are a couple of trends that we're seeing which are interesting. One is what we call the set jetting, which is this notion of, you know, the how you know, hotels and destinations are being featured into, you know, pop culture kind of shows. And we've been lucky because we were part of White Lotus season one and season two.
Yes, of course. I don't
know if you saw it, but what a perfect opportunity for you to showcase our beautiful kind of hotel as a backdrop, and but also destination, right? Because suddenly Sicily and Taormina is just the hot spot. And we just had an interview, our general manager by CNN, actually over the weekend, and he was just stating that obviously the hotel is booked, but Taormina, you know, as is exploding as a destination, right? So it just shows the power of what we call
shrewd marketing strategy. Yeah,
you know? And, for sure. And linking back to pop culture at the same time as well, right? And you know, part of it was incredible push from our sales team, but also a bit of luck, right?
Yeah.
But you know, and we're certainly trying to ensure that we'll be part of the future seasons as well. So we'll see where that nets out. But yeah, it's been incredible.
Wonderful. So part of this podcast is this concept of paying it forward. And so the last question I ask of guests is, who's next? You know, who would be the next industry leader that you would recommend we interview for Marketing Vanguard?
You know, I used to sit on the board of Aesop, which I think is a beautiful brand, and I just brought in a new CMO, Martha Vallando, who just started a couple of months ago. And I think she has an incredible kind of background, but I think the brand is such an interesting brand that I still kind of look at as a brand that is source of inspiration in terms of how they think about, you know, their business, how they're thinking about the linkage back to design, how they're thinking back in terms of standing out in a super crowded category, and continues kind of being probably one of the most successful beauty brands out there. And it's a small brand still, going back to the earlier point. I think I'm just curious to see what she's going to do to take a successful brand. One of the one of the things that we were discussing when I was in the board is like, how do you manage scale and don't break the success formula as you scale, right? Yeah. And so yeah. I think they're getting at a stage where obviously the brand is much bigger than when I was there, but it makes the topic even more relevant, right? Because there's so many examples where brands have been scaled and broken in the process. And so I'm sure she'll share the whole plan and thinking, and she has great experiences coming from lots of great brands before that. But I thought that super powerful, exciting kind of success story as a brand and a new leader in position. So I thought she could be a good one to talk to.
Wonderful. We will reach out. Mark, thank you so, so much for joining me. This has been a wonderful conversation. It's been so great to catch up with you. And I know our audience is going to find so much benefit in hearing your story. So thank you.
Thank you, Jenny. Great to talk to you.
Thank you for listening to Marketing Vanguard, part of the Adweek Podcast Network and Acast Creator Network. This podcast was produced by Jordan Pratano, executive produced by Al Manarino and John Heil, and edited by Lane McGibney at Boutwell Studios. You can listen and subscribe to all of Adweek's podcasts by visiting adweek.com/podcasts. Stay updated on all things Adweek Podcast Network by following us on Twitter at Adweek Podcasts. And if you have a question or suggestion for the show, send us an email at podcast@adweek.com. Thanks for listening.